Warning, the following audio transmission will forever change your outlook on society. You will no longer believe the narrative. You are about to wake up and see things for what they really are. News, facts, and opinions. This is the Doom Daily Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Doom Daily Show. I am your host, Jester Dooms. The email, doomdailyshow@gmail.com. For me, it is Wednesday, May 15th. Time is 18:36. For you, it is probably Thursday morning, and you're waking up, you're going to work, maybe you're on the road, maybe you already dropped the kids off, maybe you don't have kids, maybe you're waking up, stretching your arms, and looking out the window and yawning, said, it's a good day to not have any kids. Maybe that's how you wake up in the mornings. You have your coffee, you're kid-free, and you're like, life's a breeze. Maybe that's where you're at. For me, I woke up today, had my coffee, got into a bit of a, I don't want to say argument, but a bit of a spat with the wife this morning, and then took off out the door to go to work and did my job throughout the day. Still getting a lot of rain here. It's getting a little annoying. Just to say the least, it's like getting annoying. And it's annoying because the rain's just prevents me from doing a lot of things. So, preventative weather. Anyway, so went to work, did what I had to do, came home, had dinner, salad, broccoli, good Bulgarian feta cheese. And the protein for the evening was turkey sausage. So, absolutely delicious. Ate dinner. Now I'm out here recording in the Toyota Tundra with you lovely folks. I plan on, once I'm done doing this recording, running on down to the local hardware store and picking out paint for the house, because I've decided that I want to paint the house. I think it needs to happen, and it needs to happen soon. And it's a relatively large undertaking, and it just kind of needs to get done. Things need to start getting painted around here. Like, things need to start happening. And I'm really, honestly, sick to death of being the only one at my house that does anything exterior, anything outdoors, anything that's labor intensive. It always comes down to me. Now, we started this homestead. There was nothing here on this property. So everything we did, we did on our own, which was mainly by my design, or it was based on my motivation. Nobody really could pull their heads out of their asses long enough to be like, I think we should do this, or maybe how this is how this should go. It was absolutely chaotic the whole time with the people that I had in my immediate area creating hell for me while I'm trying to accomplish things. And the same people that are causing this chaos, that are not allowing me to accomplish things, are also the same people that are asking things of me. And it's like, look, I got to get shit done here. You need to do your own shit, okay? I can't be worried about you 24 hours a day because I have to worry about this. Like, that's just the way it is. There's other responsibilities outside of taking care of you. So, just have to get done what gets done, and you have to do what you can do, and I'll do what I can do, and that's relatively it. Well, in the grand scheme of things, as soon as I went back to work, working full-time, everything ceased to exist on getting done. Everything kind of stopped. And now, I find myself in this struggle of trying to balance things around work and trying to accomplish projects around work, and it doesn't go very well. And I found out I tried to explain this to my wife repeatedly before going back to work, that, hey, we have a lot of things we need to do around here, and it costs more to hire a contractor to do these things than what I can do them for myself. So I'm essentially working just to get indebted to a contractor, is what's happening here. Okay. And this was proven with the first job that we hired somebody to do. We wanted them to come up here and do fencing. They said they would do it for what I currently make in an hour at work. And it was like, that's a good deal, you know, I guess. I don't know. So the guys come here. They do the work. They absolutely do a horrible job. So not only did they take the money and run, but now I have to go redo their work. And I'm looking at my wife saying, you know, you need to come look at this work that they did so you can see what I see, how I see it, everything that they did wrong. And then she's like, yeah, I get it. She understands why I'm saying it's so screwed up. Like, she gets the mess ups in the craftsmanship, the mess ups in the work. And it's like, I can do this myself and we don't have to pay anybody. I just don't have time. And now I find myself running around here like a chicken with my head cut off, and there's 1,000 projects, 1,000 irons in the fire, and not one of them can get done because there's not successful time to be spent on them. And with this, the rain comes and just blows it all to shit. But here's the problem. We now found ourselves in have to positions. We have to paint the house, because if we don't paint the house is going to rot, because our house is a log cabin and the log cabin was originally stained. Well, the stain is now sun bleached and weather beaten. So the stain is now being removed from the house. So now it's just exposed wood. What do you get with exposed wood? You get rot. Okay. So we have two options. We ignore it and let the house rot away. Expect the lovely termites and things like that to happen. Or we get up off our asses and we start painting. That's literally the options we have. We do not have more. So I suggested, why don't we hire somebody to paint the house? Well, my wife hated that idea. Why would we hire someone to paint? Well, because we don't have the fucking time. And I don't have the time. And we know how projects go around here where they get halfway done and don't get finished. So do you want a half-painted house? Like, what do you want to do here? So long and the short is we're going to start this project. Not sure when. I've got this weekend off, so maybe we could do this kind of systematically to where we work on one portion, tape one portion off, her and I go out there, we knock it out, we get it done, come back, trim it out, and then move on to the next section of the house, wham, bam, and we just keep going like that. Maybe that will work. I don't know, but what I do know is something has to get done, and if we can't do it, we're going to have to hire somebody. It's amazing how awesome being a homeowner is and having a paid off house and not having a mortgage or rent or anything like that hanging over your head. What really sucks though is knowing you have to keep up with it. Anyway, we'll be right back after these messages.
If you like hard-hitting news and up-to-date explosive investigations, well, you better look elsewhere. Check out the Beans and Weenie Show is Doomed most Saturday nights at 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time on Rumble and Podbean. You are listening to the Doom Daily Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Doom Daily Show. I am your host, Jester Dooms. The email, doomdailyshow@gmail.com. Scooter, what are you doing over there? I can't see your hands. Bring them up. Producer Scooter, lift your hands up above the desk. Okay. Just checking on you. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, now that I got more into the healthcare industry, and I'm working on the ambulance now, and I'm seeing more of the internal workings of healthcare. I gotta say, I'm actually excited to see the future of healthcare and to see where things are going in the future. Not for the sake of like big pharma making more money, or us being slaves to this medical system. Not for that reason, but for the reason of every day there's some like new medical technology coming out that's making things more mind-blowing. So here's something that's really interesting, and this is like above my pay grade at this point. This is out of my scope of knowledge completely, but we're testing out new monitors at work. We're like demoing them, and these monitors have the capability to do ultrasound. Could you imagine that in the back of an ambulance doing ultrasounds? Okay. And like, I'm just thinking about this, like, man, and then you go in and if you have to, you know, give a patient meds, you could track them right there and hit them on the screen. And I just got like this thought, you know, in the future, like, what if your IV lines are eventually ran through the monitor? Okay. Like they're connected in there, right? Somehow. And you have pre-dosed medicine cartridges, almost like printers have ink cartridges. What if these monitors became so advanced that you could just push a button and it could, you know, just deliver these fluids through IVs or deliver these meds through IVs, you know? And it got me thinking the other stuff that we could have in the future. I just found out today, talking with one of my employees, that auto load stretchers are now the new standard. That if a department or an ambulance company, somebody's buying a new ambulance, I guess it's standard now, at least maybe in our state, that they have to have auto load stretchers. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. Only for the sake of employees' backs and safety of patients. Okay. So lifting a stretcher all the time does cause people to have injuries. Sometimes people are so worn out, they've worked so much, they try to lift patients, they can't. Then they have to call for help. There is the worst case scenario where someone could slip and fall trying to lift this thing and then the patient falls. Like there are those worst case scenarios. And the auto load stretchers take a lot of this off the table. Okay. They're saving your back. Man, are they saving your back. Not only are they saving your back, but they are increasing safety for patients, because once that thing is locked in, it's not going anywhere. All right, so if you're on a hill or this, that, or whatever, you're not on a 100% even surface, that thing's not shifting, it's lifting and it's going in, right? And that was something you didn't see and probably wasn't even thought of 20 years ago. And now it's the new standard. So what's going to be the new standard in the next 10 years, right? Who knows? I look for medical advancements to keep being pushed like that into the future. The other thing, like, I wish our ambulance had this. A lot of ambulances, they have the lowering. When you pop the back doors open, the air ride suspension lowers to make the stretchers easier to get in, to make it to where you don't have to step up as high. We don't have that. I wish we did. I wish that was a standard. But there's all these cool things happening now within the emergency medical field. All these little technological advancements, like these monitors that we're demoing, are Wi-Fi enabled, and they have 4G, and they could send reports in real time, patient vitals in real time. It is insane. Thinking 30 years ago, you know, this technology didn't even exist. You know, to now, you have these monitors that are wirelessly transmitting vitals up to a cloud that you can pull later for reports, that you can, you know, then download on the computers and save the information. I mean, it's wild. It's crazy. And it's really cool when you kind of consider that, you know, in emergency medicine, you don't know what to expect when you're going out to a call, okay? And no two patients are necessarily going to be alike. They're not going to be having the same exact issues. If they have the same exact issue, they might describe it different, okay? So imagine when we have technology, and this is what would be so cool with an emergency medicine. Imagine when we have that exact technology that could pinpoint the problem. If a patient tells you they're having abdominal pain, it could be so many different things, like so many reasons why. But if you had a machine that could pinpoint exactly where that pain is coming from and tell you exactly what's happening, wouldn't that be wild? Wouldn't it be crazy? Or if a patient says, I'm sick, I don't know what's wrong, if you could instantly, you know, like you check people's blood glucose level, you just prick the finger, put it on a thing, it tells you their blood glucose level. Imagine if you had that same thing, but it could tell you, oh, they have the flu. Oh, they have COVID. Oh, they have this. Or, oh, they're, you know, they have cancer and they didn't know it, what, et cetera, right? Imagine if we had that kind of technology. In the future, I think that stuff is coming. I really think it is. And I think the only thing that would prevent this from happening is I don't think that the hospitals and big pharma and healthcare providers would appreciate people being diagnosed on ambulances. I don't think that they would appreciate that, because it takes kind of the need away to go to the hospital. Like, if you're like, I'm sick, I feel like crap, and you call 911 and someone says, oh, you know, we tested it, it's, you just have the flu. You know, you probably need, you know, some antibiotics, this, that, follow up with your primary. Well, you're not going to the emergency room, and now they can't bill you. And that's what it's all about, right? So I don't know, but it's really cool to think about these advancements that are coming. And it's really cool to think about, you know, how AI is going to play into this. And I know normally when we talk about increases in technology, I'm usually 100% against it. But when it comes to the healthcare field, there's more advancements out there than I think that we know about. There's a lot of things in experimental stages. There are cure for things that they don't want to release, mainly because, you know, you don't make money off of healthy people. You make money off the sick. So why would you want to solve some problems? You want to keep some problems going in order to keep making money, you know. But it is very cool to think about the advancements that are coming, and it's really cool to speculate and kind of, you know, guess of the things that could be coming out. I just find it to be fascinating. And like, I'm very new in this industry, so I'm learning new things every day. It seems like I'm at work every day and I'm picking up more and I'm learning more and I'm hearing terminology I haven't heard before. So I'm picking up more and more and more and more every day, and it's really cool. And what's awesome is my partner is someone I went to EMT school with. And me and him were like on the same point. You know, we sat together, we studied together, you know, we went over everything together. So we were on about the same level there as far as knowledge went. And now he got into this and he went and he furthered advanced his education. So he's like school, like there's so much stuff he knows that I don't now. And it's really, really impressive. Anyway, we'll be right back after this ad.
PrepStock is happening this October. Go to www.prepstock.net for more information. PrepStock is the ultimate survival event. That's prepstock.net for all information and updates.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Doom Daily Show. I am your host, Jester Dooms. The email, doomdailyshow@gmail.com. Producer Scooter, you ready for this? Are you ready? Hold on to your hats, guys. So we talked about how this election as a whole is basically like a big soap opera, right? There's all this drama and stuff going on. Well, apparently Trump and Biden are going to debate. Okay, so this is by Chase Smith on the Epoch Times. Biden and Trump to meet for June-September debates. All right. Here we go. The earliest presidential debate in televised history will take place on June 27th on CNN. A press release from the outlet on May 15th confirmed the announcement came hours after former President Donald Trump accepted an invitation from Joe Biden earlier in the day for two debates in June and September. The debate will be held on June 27th from CNN studios in Atlanta, Georgia, a key battleground state for the November election. Notably, no audience will be present at the debate. I wonder why. To ensure candidates may maximize the time allotted in the debate. Okay, let's pause right there for a second. No. You don't want people in there because you don't want people talking about how things actually went. Because if the only people that are in there are the people that are, you know, taping this and the people that are potentially seeing this live, you can go back out and put highlights out later of when Biden did really well because we know the media favors him. And they just simply won't air the stuff again where Trump got him, like where he had his balls in a vice, basically, is what they'll probably do. So it's not to give them the max. What the hell does an audience have to do with their airtime? Someone explain that to me. Okay. Anyway, moving on. President Biden posted on X before the news was confirmed by the outlet that he had accepted CNN's invitation, adding, "Over to you, Donald, as you said, anywhere, anytime, any place." Okay, so now Biden's trying to play this a hard ass card, right? President Trump, in his response posted on Truth Social, said that it was his great honor to accept the CNN debate against crooked Joe Biden, the worst president in the history of the United States and a true threat to democracy. President Trump added he would also accept an ABC News debate against President Biden on September 10th, shortly after President Biden posted on X that he also accepted this debate. "I've also received and accepted an invitation to a debate hosted by ABC on Tuesday, September 10th, President Biden said on the post on X. Trump says he'll arrange his own transportation. I'll bring my plane too. I plan on keeping it for another 4 years." For the CNN debate, the outlet said in the press release that moderators from the debate and additional details will be announced at a later date. The Biden campaign sent a letter to the Commission on Presidential Debates earlier on Wednesday saying that the president would not take part in the commission's planned debates, preferring earlier debates prior to the early voting period in many states. The Trump campaign also sent a letter to the commission in April, noting they preferred earlier debates as well. Candidates agree to requirements. So while the Biden campaign's letter to the commissioner on Wednesday called for the debates to be one-on-one, President Trump in his response said he would prefer a large audience, though the campaign has agreed to the CNN debate with no audience. Again, they only want no audience so they can manipulate things later. Having an audience in the studio has nothing to do with anything. And I mean, okay, so say, like, let's say hypothetically here, you do have an audience here, and hypothetically, it makes time run longer. What does CNN care about? These things are aired and people watch and ratings go up. If anything, a longer debate means more money for them. So why would you care? Why would you give a shit? Do you see what I'm saying? When you look at this shit through kid glasses, it just all changes. The more airtime on something very popular, the more money they make. Why would they want to put that in jeopardy? Oh, I don't know. So they can manipulate it later. Well, that makes sense. If you weren't there to see it, they could change it. If you weren't there to see it, they could pick and choose this, that, the other. That's just how it is. Anyway, the outlet noted to qualify for participation, candidates must fulfill the requirements outlined in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution of the United States. File a statement of candidacy with federal election commissions. A candidate's name must appear on a sufficient number of state ballots to reach the 270 electoral vote threshold to win the presidency prior to the eligibility deadline, agree to accept the rules and format of the debate, and receive at least 15% in four separate national polls of registered or likely voters that meet CNN's standards for reporting. Because CNN has standards on reporting, right? They've always had that. So you guys, basically, you see what's going on here, right? I don't think that we need to read more into this, but I think it's really awesome that there are going to be some debates, because if you have forgotten in the past, old Biden didn't want to debate Trump. They didn't want to let him out to do so. And that was like a thing that was talked about a lot, that he wasn't going to go out and do the debates. Now he's like, I'm all for it. I wonder why. They're playing catch up. They know that their balls are in a vice, and they're doing what they can to get him out of that vice. We'll be right back after these messages.
Can't get enough of Jester Dooms? Check out his other show, It's Doomsday Podcast, available on all podcast platforms. That's It's Doomsday Podcast.
Back to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Doom Daily Show. I am your host, Jester Dooms. The email, doomdailyshow@gmail.com. All right, southern U.S. border sees 143% jump in imported malaria. Whoa. Naveen Athraparli, good luck saying that five times fast, is the author of this article. Anyway, this is on the Epoch Times. Imported malaria cases in three southern border jurisdictions more than doubled in 2023 from the years prior, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, a.k.a. the CDC. During January through December 2023, a total of 68 imported malaria cases were identified from reportable disease surveillance systems in Pima, Arizona, San Diego, California, and El Paso, Texas, the CDC said in a May 9th report. This is 143% higher than the 28 cases in 2022, when there were three in Pima, I think I'm saying that right, Pima, 12 in San Diego, and 13 in El Paso. Because malaria case counts were higher than expected, enhanced case investigations were initiated, said the agencies. Now, let me break this down for a second, not to throw too much gas on this fire, but just like we saw with COVID, the more they test, the more they investigate, the more they will report. We know this because you're simply getting more cases to report. Again, look at it through kid glasses, right? The more you look for it, the more you're going to find it, period. The CDC found that 15 of 68 cases occurred among U.S. residents, two were found in newly arrived refugees, and two among travelers with unknown immigration status. The majority, 49 cases, were identified among other newly arrived migrants, including asylum seekers. Imported malaria cases in 2023 increased correspondingly to the entry of asylum seekers and other migrants into the United States via southern land border, the CDC said. Now, we have talked about this before on the show, that people are bringing things here from other countries. Now, I'm not going to go off and preach vaccines and healthcare and all this stuff. I'm not going to do that. But this is what I will say. We've beaten and combated a lot of illnesses and diseases here in the U.S. Okay, we have. And we've done that through proper healthcare and vaccines. And we have done this over the years. Like, you don't hear much about smallpox or malaria or things like this. You don't hear about these things because we kind of beat it and we kind of knocked it out. But the issue you have now is in a lot of these other countries that didn't have the same healthcare standards that we have, you're having people bring these things back into the country. And these will increase. And what sucks is, and this is the thing that they don't tell you, and again, look at this through kid glasses. Say person A is coming across the southern border and they're going to meet up with a contact that they have, say, in New York. Well, think about how far they have to travel to get to New York, and they have a virus or a disease and they're spreading it along that path of travel to New York. Okay. Now person A gets there, say they have malaria. Okay. Say that they make a contact, person B, coming up in Mexico, and they're coming up with, say, smallpox. We're just using these as hypothetical examples. Well, now then they're doing the same thing, all these different points of contact traveling from the southern border to meet up with person A in New York, okay? Now, they're not going to use all the same bathrooms. They're not going to use all the same gas stations. They're not going to use all the same hotels. They're not going to stop at the same restaurants. They're not going to stop in the same places. So therefore, it's kind of trackable along a route, but it's not exactly trackable along a route. Because the long and the short is person A and person B have the same path of travel, but they have different points of stop along the way. They're stopping at different points. They may be taking different roads. They may be stopping in different towns. So you might have, say, person A might cause malaria outbreaks every 150 miles in different towns along their journey. And then person B might be stopping every 100 miles and having a smallpox outbreak every 100 miles along the same path, right? So at this point, it's very hard to track, but you know that it's along this path going here. All right. So it's again, look at this through kid glasses. It's not hard to figure out. And whenever they start investigating this more, they're going to find more diseases. They're going to find more cases of things happening. Okay. The agency advised healthcare professionals to obtain a complete travel history, consider malaria among symptomatic patients with recent travel through areas where malaria is, I guess, there, and immediate prompt testing and, if indicated, treatment. Okay, so exactly what I was saying. The travel history, right? They're going to want to see where these people went. Before arriving in the United States, the U.S. residents and refugees had traveled through other nations infected with the disease. So like I was saying earlier, other countries have not beaten these things like we have, okay? Among the 49% other newly arrived migrants, 96.94% had traveled through one or more countries with malaria. Out of the 68 cases, 63 were hospitalized, with almost a third experiencing severe disease. The agency noted that severe malaria was more common among other newly arrived migrants than among American residents. No deaths have been reported. Approximately 2,000 malaria cases are imported into the U.S. United States annually, mostly among U.S. residents with recent travel to areas with malaria. Okay, so malaria used to be the leading cause of death in the United States before eradicating it in the 1950s. Last June, 5 cases of malaria of infection were on U.S. soil, were reported, 4 in Florida, 1 in Texas. This was the first local spread of the infectious disease within 2 decades. Okay, so exactly what I'm saying is exactly what's happening and is exactly what they're worried about. Ladies and gentlemen, I typically don't pre-read these articles. This is one I hadn't pre-read. So sorry about the pauses and the errors in the reading. So, you know, we go through these things. We try to get this shit knocked out. It becomes a big problem when the government has more fear tactics to use against you. Because, again, now you might have people that are going to the voting booth absolutely swayed by the idea that the southern border needs to be closed because it's opening a floodgate for disease to come into the country. And we've said for years, well, that's how a lot of drugs are coming in. And they are. They absolutely are. But they're not the only way they're coming in. When you think that, you know, disease is coming through the U.S. and we have actual, like, people that are carrying these diseases in, one would think to yourself, man, if you had a wall at that border and you had a checkpoint and could treat people before they entered the U.S. and started spreading stuff, that would be fantastic. And it absolutely would be. This is an extreme threat to the American citizens. It really, really is. Because if you have somebody that comes through and they just start spreading something like wildfire and you can't control it, we're screwed. We all saw how the government reacted with COVID. I mean, here would have been a more logical reaction to COVID. I'm just going to say this again through kid glasses. People that were immune compromised should have stayed home, okay? Instead of putting all this money, you know, into these other weird fundings, like, I don't know, buying 1,000, 100 million, bajillion, trillion respirators that have magically vanished. Where are all the respirators? I'd love to know. There's got to be warehouses full of these things somewhere. I haven't seen them. The ventilators, you know, and the respirators, those things. But they're just gone. The ventilators are gone. So one would think you don't shut down the country. You don't put all the funding into ventilators. What you do is if you're immune compromised, you stay the fuck home. You don't go out. We will give extra funding to first responders to do more. So as the fire department's sitting there not doing anything and they have their downtime, they take 2 of their guys and they have them go pass out meals and go check on people. Okay? If they start showing signs, you pull those guys away and you give somebody else. You put other first responders out there. And you just give them extra funding to make this happen. You get volunteers together to go out and assist people. You know, that's what you do. Because a lot of people leave their house for basic necessities. And those basic necessities are food, water, clothing, maybe laundry services. This is what people are leaving for. So if you're immune compromised, you have the government throw the funding to people that are available, the volunteers, this, that, the other. Have them get these people the things that they need so that the few immune compromised people out there could stay home. So say you live in a town of 50,000 people, okay? And let's say, and this would be a high number for this, but let's say 1,000 of those 50,000 are immune compromised, okay? You have 1,000 people you got to work with. Let's split this down in groups of 10s, okay? What you do is you take a handful of volunteers with a checklist with 100 people, and you simply call these 100 people, and you maybe put 10 volunteers with these 100 people, maybe 10, okay? And you just go through a checklist. You call each one in the morning. You have these guys each make 10 phone calls. Do you need anything today? Okay, what do you need? You knock it out. These guys each make 10 stops. It's done. You let the government throw some funding at them for gas for vehicles, for things that they're going to need to accomplish this, masks, sanitizer, things like that. Instant test, rapid test for this, and that's what you do. No. What do? You send people out into the real world. You keep fucking McDonald's open where everybody has to go through and talk to the same person who's probably getting sick and spreading it. Again, look at this shit through kid glasses. We're out of time. Producer Scooter, I'm out of here. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Enjoy your Thursday. Remember, tomorrow is Friday for you guys. Last day of the week. So get ready. The weekend's almost here. Have a great day, everybody.
News, facts, and opinions. This is the Doom Daily Show.